Well, last week, Father Ethan referred to a classic movie, Shawshank Redemption. And I would like to use another movie as an introduction this week. It might not be the same caliber as Shawshank Redemption, but it still has become a classic. Rocky Balboa resides in a working-class neighborhood of Philadelphia, where he works as an enforcer for a small-time mobster. But in his spare time, he trains in a local gym as a boxer. His lack of discipline has held him back from becoming a serious contender, however. Instead, he fights for pennies in small-time bouts. That all changes when the world heavyweight champion, Apollo Creed, arrives in Philadelphia. When he learns that his scheduled opponent has backed out of the fight due to an injury, he decides to invite a local unknown to enter the ring with him. Rocky is selected primarily because of his nickname, the Italian Stallion. Rocky accepts with only 5 weeks to train and to achieve a respectable fighting condition. And train he does. But any experienced boxing fan would recognize that there is little possibility that this undisciplined slugger can stay in the ring with a champ. Certainly, Creed is not worried because he spends his time in publicity ops rather than even doing any training at all. In the first round, as the champ dances around the ring, stinging Rocky with lightning jabs, something unprecedented happens. Rocky lands a fierce uppercut and knocks the champ to the canvas. Stunned into reality, Creed begins to fight like a champion, pummeling Rocky with jabs and hooks. But Rocky stays in the fight. He stays on his feet, round after round, trading punches with Apollo. By the 14th round, both fighters' faces are bloodied. They have thrown so many punches that their arms are like jelly. Apollo lands an uppercut that sends Rocky to the floor, but he manages to crawl up on the ropes by the count of nine. Still determined to go the distance with the champ, Rocky motions for Apollo to come after him, much to Apollo's disappointment. Then Rocky lands a powerful blow to Apollo's ribs, and the champ staggers. Rocky falls with a flurry of punches that sends Apollo to the ropes. Only the bell saves him from likely defeat. Both managers want to stop the fight, but neither fighter will allow it. They can barely walk as the last round begins. They circle each other, straining to see through their swollen eyes. Apollo lands a few blows, but then Rocky retaliates with more body blows and clearly breaks ribs. By the time the bell rings, Rocky and Apollo are tied up, with Apollo saying, "There won't be a rematch," and Rocky replying, "I don't want one." Rocky lost the fight by a split decision, so two judges voted for the champion, one for Rocky. But he had done what he wanted to do. He lasted 15 rounds with the world champion. He stayed in the fight to the end. Rocky serves as a type of the Apostle Paul, lucky Apostle Paul, who also fought to the end in a mighty struggle for the gospel, for God's kingdom, and for the world of humanity, whom God loved and yet were lost in sin. There is disagreement, as we do some background here, there's disagreement among biblical scholars regarding the date and authorship of 2 Timothy, but the consensus would agree that it was the final letter written by Paul. He had been under house arrest in Rome, where he wrote the prison epistles, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. He was released sometime around 62 AD and continued his itinerant ministry, although we have no firm record of his travels. And during this time, he likely wrote 1 Timothy and Titus. Eventually, Paul returned to Rome during the reign of Nero. And the great fire of Rome had occurred around 64 AD, destroying nearly three-fourths of the city. Nero was the target of much of the blame. So he decided to deflect the criticism by blaming the Christians for the fire. And he inaugurated a brutal persecution, killing hundreds of innocent followers of Jesus. Being a notable public leader of the church in Rome, Paul was probably arrested around this time. Scholars date his execution around 65 to 66 AD. And it seems rather conclusive that Paul wrote this second epistle to Timothy during his second imprisonment. 2 Timothy is a very personal letter, as Paul is encouraging a disciple who traveled with him for several years before Paul assigned him to remain in Ephesus and provide spiritual stability to a church that was experiencing great doctrinal turmoil. In the letter, Paul makes it clear that he does not anticipate release from his imprisonment. And with pathos, he exhorts his young associate to remain faithful to his calling in Christ and exercise his ministry with the same zeal and fidelity that Paul had modeled for him. This morning, we're going to focus on the three statements that Paul makes near the conclusion of this letter. I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. And keep in mind that Paul is fairly certain, given this political climate in which he was imprisoned, that he will soon be executed with other brethren who were victims of Nero's acts of terror. Now, this is not inflated boasting by some self-important apostle, as some people have accused Paul. Paul was acutely aware that he was not acting independently of God's power. He wrote to the church at Corinth, quote, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace toward me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me." God's grace actively enables us to do the work he has called us to do. We receive the credit, God receives the glory, and it is a synergistic collaboration between the two. The first of Paul's personal assessments is, "I have fought the good fight." The description he uses here comes out of an athletic competition rather than a war. Behind the metaphor is the imagery of opposition, struggle, victory, and defeat. We use the same metaphor in talking about fighting cancer or fighting for an election. Living for Christ is a spiritual struggle against opponents intent on thwarting us from any sort of victory. The challenge for us is to keep fighting, never giving up, never giving in to our opponents, enduring to the end. The most popular opponent identified in Christian circles is our archenemy, Satan. But I think Christians tend to be guilty of blaming every obstacle we encounter on Satan, from cancer to canceled airline flights. Now, I'm not going to pretend to understand fully how Satan actively inhabits our world, although the book of Job does demonstrate that he is much more limited than I think we would care to realize. There may be times when Satan is spiritually engaged in the hardship that we are facing, and in those times we need to pray fervently for God to restrain him. But I tend to think that most of the obstacles we face in life cannot be directly linked to Satan. These obstacles might be emotional, psychological, intellectual, spiritual, and they always have the same potential effect: to discourage or derail us from trusting God and following Jesus. We often try to blame our hardships on things out there, but the real struggle to stay in the fight happens here and here. This world, in spite of its original declaration by the Creator as very good, is horribly broken and tragically dangerous. What happens when the unexpected death of a child or a spouse interrupts a Christian's relatively peaceful life? Deep grief often causes confusion or doubt in what we believe about God. Emotional obstacles can look something like this. How can the God of mercy seem so unmerciful by allowing this death? I thought God promised to bless me, but this feels like a curse. What did I do wrong to deserve this? We have to stay in the fight, to keep going through the emotional darkness. Intellectual obstacles arise when we encounter apparent contradictions between our beliefs and the realities of a fallen world. For example, how do we synthesize the horrific tragedies of war or a pandemic with a God who is both good and sovereign? How do we resolve the apparent contradictions between divine instructions in the Old Testament for Israel to commit genocide and a God who loves the whole world? We have to stay in the fight to navigate intellectual obstacles. Spiritual obstacles are most often the result of the weakness of our spiritual nature. All of us, regardless of the level of our spiritual maturity, are vulnerable to our sin natures. The sins to which we are most susceptible differ in each of us. But none of us is immune to that temptation of sin. We must not become disheartened or despair from the incessant enticement of sin. We have to renounce and resist sin daily. It is a fight. Hopefully, we can learn to fight off sin when it first appears in our thoughts before it becomes an action. For example, I am constantly in a fight with the sin of Romans 12:3 that was illustrated, I think, by our Pharisee this morning. Do not think more highly of yourself than you ought. After all these years of slugging it out with this pernicious opponent, I do grow weary. But I have to stay in the fight if I want to be able to say with Paul, I have fought the good fight. Kathy was a shy, quiet, reserved high school junior when a friend invited her to our youth group. That summer, she signed up to go with us on a wilderness backpacking trip in Colorado. Emphasize wilderness backpacking. We spent the first night at our base camp, where all of our supplies were provided by the organization leading the excursion. And the next day, we loaded our backpacks with the necessary food and gear, along with our clothing and personal items, and began our journey into the wilderness. The packs averaged around 45 to 50 pounds each. After hiking for a few hours, we stopped for a rest. And when everyone regrouped to continue, Kathy announced that she wasn't going any farther. She encountered psychological obstacles that paralyzed her will, and she refused to even get up off the ground. She wanted to return to base camp, but that was really not a choice. We reasoned with her, and we argued with her for hours. Hours. I remember somebody dragging her at one point. I thought, oh gosh, this is not good. You can imagine how high the frustration level rose in the group, among leaders as well as among the other students. We finally got her to agree that if we carried her backpack, that she would walk with us. So we carried it in pairs, her backpack between, hanging onto one shoulder strap, the another person hanging on the shoulder strap between the two while they carried their own backpacks. And we traded off to do this for some time. We finally arrived at our first campsite in the dark and had to set up camp in the dark. Ate our first meal very late that night. And the next morning, Kathy got up, put on her own backpack, and started hiking with us. Now, Kathy lived with a single mom, and she was plagued by serious, serious insecurities. She had to contend with powerful emotional and psychological enemies in her life. But she stayed in the fight. Bless her heart. She endured all the hardships of those next 10 days, or next 9 days now. After high school, she joined YWAM, Youth with a Mission, and was sent to India to endure another set of hardships. Debbie and I had a serendipitous encounter with her mother a few years ago and learned that Kathy was still walking faithfully with Jesus. She had stayed in the fight. Life is a constant struggle with numerous opponents that present a multitude of obstacles. These opponents attack our faith, potentially weakening our belief in a loving and good God. The obstacles have the capacity to divert us from the fat path of following Jesus. If we fail to stay in the fight, what are the options? Doubt can give way to thinking that God, if there really is one, cannot be trusted. We become less willing to pursue a relationship with Him. We begin to think that it would be better, it would just be better if we tried to live the way the world tells us to live rather than giving much credence to what God tells us. Emotional and spiritual setbacks will diminish our hope, leading to despair as we drift into the darkness. Paul gave us his own example of staying in the fight, writing to the Corinthians. He briefly enumerates the obstacles that he had faced in his lifetime. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. In my frequent journeys, I have been in danger from rivers and bandits, in danger from my countrymen and from the Gentiles, in danger in the city and in the country, in danger on the sea and among false brothers, in labor and toil and often without sleep, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Apart from these external trials, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Paul did fight the good fight. And Paul finished the race. Another metaphor from athletic competition. Paul is probably not referring to his physical life at this point because he puts it in past tense, I have finished the race. But he does believe, I think, that his ministry has come to an end. His ministry has come to an end. He has finished it. He crossed the finish line. It's over. Anticipating his impending execution, he does not expect to preach the gospel to a crowd of people again or give direction to a church ever again. This letter to his trusted co-worker was probably Paul's last act of ministry. This metaphor parallels the previous one. Finishing the race means not dropping out, not forfeiting. This kind of competition requires tenacity, perseverance, endurance, fortitude, determination, to name just but a few qualities. It has often been said that the Christian life is a marathon, not a sprint. I like thinking of the Christian life that way. The same could be said of the ministry. More than once, I wanted to leave church ministry. The sacrifices, the criticisms, and the conflicts were exhausting and more than discouraging. Eventually, God led me out of full-time church work into another kind of ministry. My mission is now to a crowd of teenagers at Niles West High School, and I consider it no less valuable than any ministry in which I have served previously. I love it. I believe every follower of Jesus has a calling to ministry, but it probably does not fit into traditional categories. These ministries can change as our circumstances and our seasons of life change. But no matter the ministry, there are going to be obstacles, opposition, setbacks, sacrifices, and suffering. The question becomes, will we stay in the race and finish what God calls us to do? The third thing that Paul claims is that he kept the faith. He has faithfully proclaimed the gospel and lived out the gospel in his life. He brought the love of Christ to his world in word and deed. You hear this phrase a lot of times, keep the faith, baby. Used to encourage someone who is suffering under intense hardships. It implies a dogged determination to keep believing when circumstances strongly argue that our faith is fruitless and futile. Paul stayed in the faith when he had so many reasons for abandoning it. It is this faith that will keep us in the fight and keep us connected to God in the suffering. And for this staying power, there is a reward at the end of the contest, the crown of righteousness. And not surprisingly, debate abounds over the meaning of this metaphor as well. Does it refer to a righteousness earned by the faithful effort of the apostle, or does it refer to a gift that was given as a result of his faith? Once again, we encounter the mysterious synthesis of human activity with divine faculty. Man's effort infused with God's power. And we can look forward to this prized crown of victory if we can stay in the fight and finish the race. The Rocky movie generated five sequels between 1976 and 2006, plus it spawned three spinoffs, Creed 1, Creed 2, and Creed 3. But it's been 20 years since the last Rocky movie, and at age 79, it is unlikely that Sylvester Stallone will be adding any new contributions to the franchise. Rocky has run its course. It's over. My friend Kathy, on the other hand, is still running the race. After YWAM, she went to college, received a nursing degree. She married in her 40s and had a daughter. Her mother died from pancreatic cancer, and Kathy was her caretaker for a while. She was in a serious car accident, but she did heal well. Kathy's backpack has acquired different contents over the years, but she's still hiking. For most of us, our race is not over. We are still in the fight against obstacles and opponents that are trying to knock us out of the competition. And I don't know what you might be facing, but I'm here to say there is no opponent that can match the grace of God in your life. I want to encourage you to stay in the fight, stay in the race, stay in the faith. A faith that teaches us that no matter what this fallen world throws at us, there is a God who loves us and has shown us how much he loves us by sending his son to secure our forgiveness and conquer death. He will carry your backpack when you need him to.